Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In 2016, Vermont passed a law requiring food producers to include a label if the food was made or might have been made with genetically modified ingredients. Almost immediately, the federal government passed a law saying it was going to look into labeling, but in the meantime, it made all state laws moot. So the Vermont law was actually only in effect for a couple of months. One of the big points of contention when the Vermont legislature was debating the idea was whether or not it would be seen as a negative judgment on GMO crops to have a label. Many opponents saw a label as a de facto warning, but advocates maintained it was about consumer choice, not a scare tactic. UVM economist Jane Kolodinsky ran a study when Vermont's law was in force, and many of the labels have stayed in place even since, and she and her co-writer just released the results, which might seem surprising. Kolodinsky and Purdue University's Jason Lusk found that consumer opposition to GMOs decreased in Vermont, but not elsewhere in the nation. Why might increased labeling result in decreased opposition? Well, we're going to talk about that today, as well as look at where the federal labeling law is going. Safe to say, a fairly different direction than Vermont's. And I'm joined in the studio by Jane Kolodinsky, chair of the Community Development and Applied Economics Department at UVM. She is the co-author of the study called Mandatory Labels Can Improve Attitudes Towards Genetically Engineered Food. Professor Kolodinsky, nice to have you with us again.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Alan Bjerga. He reports on food and agriculture for Bloomberg and joins us from the Bloomberg offices in Washington, D.C. Alan, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hello.
Alan, maybe you could start us off with the broad perspective here, where we are in terms of labeling laws in the United States.
Sure. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has spent the last 2 years trying to come up with ideas for GMO labeling in light of a law that Congress passed in 2016 that really was a direct consequence of Vermont's law. When Vermont passed its GMO labeling law, and you started to see other states starting to have activity on this front, there were states like Connecticut that were saying, we're going to have labeling too if other states do it. You saw this looming patchwork that was taking shape of different states having different rules with GMOs, which is a marketing and distribution nightmare for food companies. So they decided that they would head this off by looking at some sort of a national law. It was one of the few laws that Congress actually passed in 2016. And along with creating a process for a national standard, it also did something that the government and the industry kind of really also wanted to do, which was preempt Vermont's law, basically by creating this national standard. So we're now at the point where just last week, the deadlines for comments on this rule passed. The USDA, a couple months before that, put out a proposed rule. There was a lot of wiggle room, even an unusual amount of wiggle room, I would say, as someone who looks at rules, as far as where these laws could go. But now all of the commenters have spoken. The USDA then starts to take account of these comments. There were more than 11,000 of them. And you would be expecting some sort of rule later this year, although honestly, it's tough to tell when this may or may not happen. It's still going to be a while, but we've had some key milestones and are definitely getting a sense of what these labels may look like.
You know, Alan mentioned that having a patchwork of state laws could be a marketing and labeling and sort of logistical nightmare for companies trying to figure out what label they need to put where. But Professor Kolodinsky, we found also that in the terms of the Vermont law, even though it was basically preempted by the federal law within a couple of months, many multinational food companies not only labeled while they were supposed to in Vermont, but continue to label their products. Some companies have said, oh, we were doing it anyway because we're all about consumer awareness. So whether that's marketing speak or the truth, I guess, could be left up to debate. But do you see Vermont playing a role in getting big companies and small companies to actually label their food that may have been or is produced with genetically modified ingredients?
Yes, I think we did see that in 2016 with the I believe that many companies felt like Vermont was going to lead the way and the rest of the country was going to follow. And so they started labeling produced or partially produced using genetic engineering, simple disclosure labels, nothing fancy, nothing hidden. And they continue to today. And I can say Procter & Gamble is one. General Mills and Campbell's is another company that you see these simple disclosures remaining on labels.
So, Professor Kolodinsky, you started running this study before Vermont's labeling law went into effect. You ran the study during the labeling law, and you've run its surveys. You've run them outside of the period when Vermont's law was really in effect. So, what did you find?
That's correct. We've been asking Vermonters about their opinions on this subject way back till 2000, actually. The Vermont law led to this natural policy experiment where Vermont's the only place that had this policy and the rest of the country didn't. And my colleague Jason Lusk had been collecting national data, and we had collected the Vermont data. So we had this before label, during label, and after label situation. And what we found was that in Vermont, opposition actually decreased significantly. Now, it was about 20%, but that was a statistically significant decrease, while in the rest of the country, opposition remained going up slightly. So this was a surprising finding to us.
How many people are actually opposed? When you say opposition decreased by 20%, but can you give me a sense of how people, you know, the consumer sentiment in general, how people feel and how many people are actually concerned about GMOs?
Well, if you were to take an average where one is I strongly support and a five is I strongly oppose, in Vermont, we started at a 3.6. So on average and overall, people are opposed to using genetic engineering in the production of food. And for the nation, it was about a 3.2 out of 5. So slightly more opposed than not opposed.
Okay, so just to be clear, we're not talking about 3% of people who were opposed.
We're talking
about a ranking from 1 to 5.
And on average.
And people were generally opposed to GMOs. And what you found in this study is that the labeling decreased consumer opposition to
That's
GMOs.
That's correct.
I don't think that surprised you because you've been writing about that very idea before this law went into effect. So not a surprise to you, even though it may be a surprise to others?
Well, it wasn't a surprise to me because we had run a hypothetical situation a couple of years ago and presented it at the Applied and Agricultural Economics meetings. And it received quite a bit of attention, but nobody really believed us. And before our study happened now in the real world, there were only hypothetical studies. What would you do as a consumer? What do you think as a consumer? Not actually how people behaved in the marketplace. So this is really the first one that has shown on the ground that opposition has decreased.
Alan Bjerga, you've been looking at GMOs and GMO labeling and reporting on agricultural issues for a long time as well. But did this study surprise you?
Not particularly. You know, it really gets to the heart of a lot of the numbers that you've seen on GMO labeling, which is, you know, it's something that, frankly, a lot of mainstream food consumers don't think much about. And when you ask someone in a survey, would you like to see a GMO label, for example, people like to see information just in general, you know, and so when you see these surveys saying 90% of Americans want a GMO label, well, 90% of Americans may not have ever thought about GMO labels, but if you ask them, the answer will likely be sure. When you get down to it, you realize that a lot of people have a very poor idea of where GMOs actually are in food. Like, there have been surveys saying that, you know, 2/3 of consumers surveyed wouldn't eat food with GMOs in it, except, frankly, a very large portion of foods do have GMOs in it. It's just the consumers don't know that. This isn't to say that consumers are ignorant. It's just, you know, you've got a lot of other things going on in your life, and not everybody gets, you know, all that caught up in what's going into their food or looking closely at their label. It's not a majority of the population. So once the information comes out and you see a label on, a lot of consumers who haven't thought about this before and think of GMOs as a sort of nefarious niche thing, now they see it on all these foods that they've been eating for years and they think, oh, okay, that had GMOs. Well, I'm doing okay, so it must be okay. And it's about as simple as that.
Do you agree, Professor Kolodinsky?
I don't think it's quite as simple as that. I think that we always say in the U.S. that consumers vote with their dollars, and products that consumers demand will succeed and products that they don't will not succeed and won't make a profit. And my Economics 101 says that consumers have information on which to base their choices. And if that information isn't available, whether you use it or not, somebody else is making that decision for you. And so I've been conjecturing for quite some time that the labels are actually going to level the playing field in that consumers who really want that information are going to use it to make their decisions. Consumers who don't care are going to go about their very merry way. And the whole debate is going to sort of settle down a little bit. So I agree with you, but I don't think it's that simple.
So do you have corollary data that shows how products that contain GMOs have done financially? I mean, it's interesting to think about sentiment, but putting that up next to how these products are actually selling would also give us some information, right?
Right. And, well, I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag, but in 2 weeks, a graduate student and I will be presenting that very information, study.
So you can't even give us a sense yet?
No.
Oh, man, we should have waited. If only we'd known. But you know, it's interesting to think about that. And reporting that I did prior to the law going into effect showed that some major multinational companies were actually taking GMOs out of their product line prior to the labeling law, very quietly, not announcing it, but saying we're getting GMOs out of children's cereal, for example. So did you see that in your studying, Professor Kolodinsky?
Well, we didn't go to that much of a granular level. But what's going to happen, I believe, is that with the mandatory labeling law that says contains BE, it's no longer going to be GE or GMO, it's going to be bioengineered. So the government is changing the language on us, which I think shocked many of us. And developing lines of non-genetically engineered foods, just as you say. And so that opens up a whole other arena for the non-GMO label to come about. So in the end, it really gives people choice in the marketplace.
Let's go to Laura, who's calling in from Derby Line. Hi, Laura. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just calling to comment. I'm the kind of person who reads every label of everything I buy. I don't buy processed foods. I mean, I don't buy any like frozen dinners. I don't buy frozen vegetables or really frozen anything. So I guess I'm kind of obsessed with avoiding genetically modified anything. And, you know, I just want to say it is really still important to me to see the non-GMO label, or if it's going to say non-BE, I'll be grabbing it because I never buy anything that I know has a GMO in it. And there's a website called cleanlabels.com that tells you what the product that you're buying.
Laura, thanks for your comment. I really appreciate hearing from it. And let's also now go to Bob, who's calling in from Rutland. Hey, Bob, what's your perspective?
Yes, well, thank you. I just wanted to quickly comment that as far as for myself and my family, it's not so much of a concern about what's going into the product as much as the product that's going into our bodies. It still is. We still tend to look for all the labels and did, you know, when the labels were out and still are in some cases because the GMOs or the biotechnology can, it's alive. It can reproduce, mutate, migrate. I mean, you know, it's something where the products are just inherently more unpredictable. So thank you much.
Yeah, Bob and Laura both saying they appreciate having labels. They pay attention to the labels. But Alan Bierga, as we were just talking about earlier, many big companies started labeling in anticipation of the Vermont law. And even though the federal law said, basically, you don't have to label in Vermont or anywhere else while we get this all sorted out, a lot of them still do label. So why do you think Vermonters have this decreased opposition to GMOs, and that's not necessarily playing out in the rest of the country where there are some labels on some foods?
Well, there are a couple things at play here because, again, your consumer base is pretty diverse. You know, when you talk about the American consumer, well, which one are you talking about? You know, are you talking about the callers we've had who follow labels very, very closely and look for every piece of information they can have? Or are you talking about folks who, yeah, the label is interesting and maybe it can make a difference, but mainly I'm looking at something like cost or convenience or whether it tastes good. There are a lot of factors that go into a food choice. That said, if you're a major company, you're looking for any edge you can get. That's why you have things like, you know, the GMO-free project, which already, you know, will say something doesn't have GMOs in it. You have things like the organic movement, which by definition isn't a biotechnology product. You have these labels out there, and that appeals very much to consumers who are conscientious about health impacts or where their food comes from. This is one more piece of that information. Companies that were retooling their supply chains and such were frankly just trying to get ahead of this issue. You don't know what this label is going to look like. You do know that there are consumers who do care. You do know that consumer foods is very much a cutthroat marketplace. There can be marketing and positioning advantages on trying to get ahead of this stuff, which, by the way, is a lot of what the whole impetus behind GMO labeling actually was. You know, it wasn't necessarily the idea that consumers would en masse turn away from GMO products, but it was the idea that companies trying to reach as wide of an audience as possible may modify their supply chain so that they were buying fewer GMO products, which means now if you're a corn grower, non-GMO has a larger market for you. This is a way of changing consumer tastes from an advocacy level that is even more powerful than, frankly, what the label is, because you're making companies respond before the label even goes on.
Professor Kolodinsky, I want to come to this question again, the same one that I asked Alan about, why this isn't playing out, your research, what you found in Vermont, playing out in the rest of the country, though. I mean, I get it that companies are changing their ingredients. Some of them are going GMO-free. But there are labels all over the country. So why are Vermonters, why is the Vermont consumer, who arguably could be seen as more conscious about what's in his or her food, changing a perspective and having decreased opposition when the sort of national consumer writ large is not?
Well, you have to remember our period of data collection when the policy was in place was that every product in Vermont had to be labeled, not just the companies that started to embrace this, but every single product had to have a produced or partially produced using genetic engineering.
If it was.
If it was. And that's 75% of the products on the shelves. So elsewhere in the United States, if there are one or two companies who decided they would label, that's a pretty watered down amount of product in the marketplace. So we did see that overall and on average, opposition continued to increase in the United States while it decreased in Vermont. So I think that the saturation of the label wasn't there in the U.S. as it was in Vermont. And we even took out our contiguous states that were touching adjacent states. We took that out of the analysis to see whether those states who said if Vermont labels, we might label. We took that out of the equation and found exactly the same thing.
And let's go to Joseph calling in from Burlington. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. It's a great topic. My comment is, you know, I hear a lot about, you know, the possible health effects or, you know, the unknowns. To me, it's similar to, you know, conventional hybrids. I mean, we've been eating modified foods for quite a while. You know, we have a big boy tomato, and that's a hybrid tomato, you know, and there are options for people that don't want that, the heirloom varieties like Brandywine, you know. And the bigger point for me is that it's not so much the health effects. It's the fact that the large agribusinesses now have a suite of products that farmers are forced to use. When these seeds come out, they need specific fertilizers, specific pesticides, all geared to that particular seed. So it forces the farmers into a system that you know they have to buy into, and makes it harder for the smaller farmers and gives farmers and consumers ultimately less choice.
So, Joseph, let me ask you this then. When you go to the grocery store, if you see something that has a label, does it affect how you decide to do your shopping along with all of those other decisions like price, convenience, all of the other things that you're choosing your products based on? Do you think about that sort of end line or start of the chain when you're making a product choice?
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, it's something that if it was clear every single time, it would definitely be part of my choice. You know, sometimes life is just busy and you need to grab something and you know that, you know, this is a pretty good product or that may or may not be organic or whatever. And it's not on a, you know, it's not one of your first criteria. But, you know, I think the labeling helps keep that in the forefront of consciousness.
Joseph,
again,
thanks.
For me, it's not a health thing. It's a lifestyle or yeah.
Well, I appreciate hearing your perspective and what you're looking at and looking for when you look at a label. Let's get a couple more thoughts in here, and then we'll return to our guests. Joanna is calling in from Derby. Hey, Joanna, go right ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, we gotcha.
Okay, great. Hi, Jane. Yeah, great topic. Very relevant. I'm very interested in this topic. And I probably take an opinion or a side that most Vermonters do not. In fact, I'm looking forward to the mandatory labels because I'll be looking for the labels to purchase. My purchase habits right now, I buy generally what's in the store. If there's something local that's organic, I'm happy to buy that too. For me, it's more about taste, price, and convenience. And the other thing that I do is I tend to avoid buying the butterfly, the non-GMO Project Verified label, only because I don't agree with the information that they put out. I would prefer just a simple, you know, non-GMO words on a package than that actual, you know, verified label.
So, Joanna,
just a different viewpoint.
Yeah, Joanna, you actually will be buying products specifically that say that have the label, the federal label, when it comes through.
Yes, yeah, I'm very comfortable with the fact that a lot of times a bioengineered or a genetic engineered crop is more environmentally friendly than what previous versions of the crop may have been. And so that's why I would be looking for that label.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing your perspective with us as well. Professor Kolodinsky, you raised your finger, right, saying, I want to comment on this. Why?
Right. I think that for both of the commenters from the field, people make their choices for a variety of reasons. And so the National Academy's report that came out, what the media picked up was that there are no health effects as we know them right now from GMO foods. And that is absolutely the case with present scientific techniques. However, there are a lot of other reasons that people choose their foods. So, for example, soybeans are genetically modified to withstand the spraying of glyphosate. And the spraying of glyphosate as an herbicide has increased by thousands of percents over the last few years. So people who want to avoid the herbicide sprayed on their foods might want to avoid GM foods. Other people might like to purchase GM foods because wheat might be drought resistant, right? So there are a variety of reasons why people would use or not use the label. But the point is, people will have that choice. And what the label does is turns it a credence good. And a credence good is a good that you don't know what is in it, even if you eat it, into a search good. I now know what this product has or how it's been produced, and I have that autonomy over my choice. And I think that's one of the main reasons we found that opposition decreased, because it increased people's autonomy. Now I know. Plus, why would the government label foods that were unsafe? If it's unsafe, they recall them.
So far from a warning, people saw it as almost an acceptance that this is okay. We're labeling it, but obviously it's okay because it has a label on it. We wouldn't put it in if we knew it was bad.
Well, that's a conjecture, but
right.
As we know it, they are safe.
Alan Bierga, let's talk a little bit about where the federal government is going right now in what these labels might look like. They're not going to say made with genetic engineering. It's not going to have GMO on it. What's the likely look of the labels?
Well, again, there was a little bit of leeway in these proposals that were made a couple months ago. And one thing, though, that was consistent was that the main acronym was going to be BE for bioengineered. Now, part of that may simply be because, you know, the term GMO itself has become so charged. It was very much an acronym that was created by opponents. People might have a sense of what GMO is that has a certain sort of baggage brought with it, and BE wouldn't have that. Of course, the downside is people don't know what BE means. I mean, I've been covering this for about a decade, and it sort of threw me for a loop when I first saw it. Was not expecting that. And then when you take a look at the labels themselves, some of them have already been open up to parody in some areas, you know, with you have like a smiley face and you have corn, you have all of these very positive images. It actually, the Canadian Health Food Association just over the border weighed in on this very issue, saying that, you know, proposed labels under the governance of USDA shouldn't contain any positive or negative in undertones and void of industry influence. And when you take a look at, you know, the smiley face BE, you do wonder what sort of overtone is being created here. Now, one other point to make, though, in terms of obfuscation from industry by using BE, perhaps that could happen at the outset, but I suspect that over time, people would get to understand what it is. I remember sitting at a hearing of the USDA the day that they said they would rename the Food Stamp Program the SNAP Program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. We all laughed about it at the time, because whoever would adopt SNAP, well, SNAP has become fairly well known over the last few years. So I think over time that confusion would go away. But the question about positive, negative undertones on the labels, take a look at them. You can judge for yourself.
You know, it is interesting, and SNAP is an interesting suggestion. You know, in reporting, we often still say formerly known as food stamps, but you're right that if it's not on the label, you know, whether people know about it or not, and we do have links on the Vermont Edition page today if you'd like to see what the possible choices are that the federal government is looking at, and they say it's just a coincidence that it looks like a smiley face, but the B and the E are both look like eyes, and there's a nice little circle underneath that it would be hard to think is anything other than a smiley face. But what about this idea of, you know, positive or negative ideas put in a consumer's head just by looking at this label, whether it's obscure or not, Professor Kolodinsky?
Well, that's very interesting. I have to say, personally, my jaw dropped when I saw the labels, and almost unanimously of the 11,000 comments, there people are opposed to the labels that seem to imply better. And it's so interesting to me, who's been looking at this issue for 20 years, is that originally when companies sued Vermont milk companies who were using RBST-free or RBGH-free or no artificial hormones, they sued them because they said that those labels with just the simple words on them would somehow make milk that was produced with them look worse. And so now we seem to be swinging in the opposite direction, where it could actually be illegal if those labels do lead people to think that those products are better, because the vernacular over time has been that they're the same. There is no difference between these two different ways to produce your food. So it's very interesting to me.
Jennifer wrote in to say BE is expletive deleted. We will not share that word. GMOs have not been proven safe, and the USDA is just trying to deceive the public with smiley face sun. And Becca says, it is sad that we are so willing to eat whatever is put on the shelf without any concern about safety. The new labels will only increase acceptance of GMOs. Sadly, we are way behind Europe in this regard. You know, what's interesting to me about Becca's comment, Professor Kolodinsky, is that it looks like the Vermont GMO labels have actually increased acceptance of GMOs. So whether it's a smiley face or not, you know, may not be the determining factor in consumer sentiment.
Well, you know, I think it's all about does a label form your preferences, or does a label reveal your preferences? So I knew that I wanted to purchase GM foods. I saw the label, therefore I purchased them. I knew I did not want to purchase them. I saw the label, so therefore I did not purchase them. Versus the label saying, oh, it's formed your opinion either in a negative way or a positive way. So I think in my opinion, I study the economics of information. So whether or not you're pro-GM or you're anti-GM, consumers have a right to make a choice in the marketplace, and that's what labels do.
Yeah, you are not impartial in this, right? You support the idea of labeling.
I'm not impartial to labeling because economics 101, consumers have perfect information.
It's interesting to me sometimes looking around even the small local grocery store that I shop at that's near my town, away from a big city, that even the deli will put on its labels, this is made with genetically modified ingredients. Why might stores that don't have to do this be doing this, even though, you know, there's no law that says they have to? They're in Vermont. It's a deli. It's not a major manufacturer. It's not like they have to make these big pre-made labels and ship them all over the country. Why would they be doing that,
Jane? Because they really believe that the consumer has a right to know, and that consumer demand shapes the marketplace.
Let's go to Jim, who's calling in from Mount Holly. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Go right ahead. What are you thinking about?
Hello.
Hi.
I teach sustainable agriculture at a community college, and so I'm involved with this issue for quite a while. And the point that was I was bringing up was briefly discussed just a moment ago was not just the issue of the health of GMO crops themselves, but the impact that growing GMO crops have on the environment where they're grown. And as we know now, the whole promotion of GMO crops has been to also promote the use of herbicides that are packaged with them. And as Roundup Ready or herbicide ready crops, soybeans and corn and so on, are promoted, the farmers then are able to use the herbicides along with them to control their weeds. And that's, from a farmer's point of view, a very attractive opportunity. But it also means that the use of these herbicides in the environment has skyrocketed, and which means their promotion has been successful. But let's remember a couple of things. The herbicides are to kill plants, and they do that pretty well. But they are also originally herbicides. Many herbicides are actually antibiotics and were developed as antibiotics, not as weed killers.
Jim, I'm going to stop you because we're short on time, but I really appreciate what you've brought up here because you do bring us into this deeper conversation about it's not just the food that we're eating. It's also growing practices, use of herbicides. And we're going to link to a previous show we did that looked at how complicated it can be to determine the environmental benefits and negatives of using GMO crops. And it really varies depending on the crop, depending on the location. And some interesting studies have been done about that. So sorry to cut you off, Jim, but really appreciate your time. And, you know, we're still waiting to see what happens with these federal labels, including which ingredients are actually included, what products have to have a label. You know, if there's no sort of genetic material in it, will it have a label at all? So still a lot to come on that. Alan Biergo will continue reporting on it, and we really appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for talking with us, Alan.
Thanks.
Alan reports on food and agriculture for Bloomberg. Jane Kolodinsky is chair of the Community Development and Applied Economics Department at UVM. We have a link to her study, Mandatory Labels Can Improve Attitudes Toward Genetically Engineered Food. Professor Kolodinsky, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jane.